Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're kindly joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John. Good to be back.
So we're going to be discussing three equities as we usually do on the podcast. But before that, we're going to touch very briefly on the wider economic and market conditions out there. And Alan, of course, looking at the announcement yesterday from Boris Johnson, he said everything's going to be going back to normal on July the 19th. I think they're going to be having a meeting, an update on the 12th, just to confirm that that is going to go ahead. But as it stands, we're going to be opening up and all restrictions moved. So that's quite an interesting prospect for the UK economy. Very little in the way of market reaction, as one would expect, because of course this is something that's been worked on for many months, very clearly signposted and outlined in terms of the timeline. There was a slight put back in the date that things will go live on the 21st of June, but again, very little market reaction to that. So it looks as though we're going to be opening up and everything's going to be going back to normal. Now, when we're looking at the markets going forward, Alan, in your view, you know, what is the next thing that people are going to be looking for and the market's going to be looking for in terms of this COVID situation and COVID timeline? I mean, is it a case now that we go through the July the 19th, all the restrictions are moved, and we see a focus then shift on markets back to growth, the economic environment, and how we're going to be dealing with this new normal, the new economy? And we're going to discuss some of this in some detail with a particular company that's operating in this and is a big player in this. But yeah, when we're sort of looking at a broader market, Alan, do you feel that investors are really done with COVID and now going to start focusing on growth figures and more traditional metrics to see the fluctuations in markets and obviously position themselves for those fluctuations? Or do you still think that COVID-19 is going to be at the front of investors' mind as we go through the rest of 2021?
I have to say, John, I believe that COVID will remain at the front of investors' minds, quite simply because I don't think we're by any stretch of the imagination done with it yet. And whilst, of course, it's great to see the Euros tournament back here in England, we've got the first semi-final tonight between Italy and Spain and the second one tomorrow night, which we were talking about before we came on air. That's fantastic. But we are seeing cases rise, certainly down here on the South Coast. There's been a big jump in cases this week, and particularly in Brighton, where my son lives, we're seeing a big surge in cases there. So whilst the Boris says he's on track to reopen, I think we're going to see these regional anomalies come back in again. We're going to see regional restrictions such as occurred last year. I think I'm in Leicestershire and Nottinghamshire. So we're by no means done with it yet. And just the way this is playing out, particularly during the summer, I think we're going to have this legacy issue hanging over the market. So investor buying and selling decisions will be very much driven by that, because we'll have to respond to the changing markets and the surges in the virus and in cases, and in some cases the receding cases in the virus. We'll have to respond to those more or less on a week-to-week basis. In the interim, of course, we are seeing activity in the markets. We of course saw Morrison's taken over early this week, and shares jumped on that front. And I think there's now a bit of a frenzy in the food retail sector on the back of this. Sainsbury's, of course, insisting that its focus is on its own strategy, not in terms of getting taken over. But nonetheless, it's provided a nice fillip for the sector. But certainly, I think we've seen, we'll come on to Ocado in a second, but I think we've seen a sea change in the way we live and the way we do things. And the technology is now there to support us in the way we live. Obviously, we're recording this podcast remotely. We do a lot of work remotely. In fact, we do most of our work remotely in what we do. So the emphasis now isn't on client meetings. It's on Zoom meetings and so on. So I think that's the way the economy is going. So companies and companies and facilities that support that, I think, will continue to do well. But certainly, yeah, COVID is going to be front and center of everything, certainly for the next 6 to 8 months.
So it's quite interesting there. We've been touching on a certain sector there in the supermarkets. Now, I mean, throughout the reopening trade, we have seen an evolution in the way that markets have been behaving. Initially, on the vaccine announcement that there was an effective vaccine, we saw a buy everything move. Everything rallies pretty much, apart from precious metals. Initially, we then started to see certain sectors playing out. I mean, in particular, some of the companies that we've mentioned there, and one particular that we're going to be discussing today, Inocado, was classed as a COVID stock to some extent. So we started to see that play out, and then we started to move towards this growth versus value element of selecting stocks, where the value element of the market was left behind. And then we saw a rally in those stocks as investors started to pick up the higher value and more quality stocks that were out there. I mean, do you think now, Alan, that we're going to start moving towards a more stock-specific element to the market, where stock picking really comes back in? You've obviously mentioned there supermarkets. Of course, there's other sectors out there that within there are specific stories, such as the Morrison story, which is attractive. Of course, there's various different reasons why people will be going to an individual stock. But do you think this is now going to become a stock picker's market, as opposed to one where you're positioning for growth or value within the portfolio?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the certainly in terms of the UK market, you know, the FTSE's come back to pretty well where it was pre-COVID. So now it's going to be a case of selecting the right stocks. And also there's a lot of risks in that number, arguably. I mean, we know for instance that the UK banks are going to start to make moves to seek to recover and seek to recover an early payback on, of course, the CBILS loans that were provided during lockdown. And as the furlough schemes end, then of course we're going to see some companies go to the wall. We're going to see companies struggle financially, which is going to further put pressure on the banks and the financial institutions that support them. So there may well be further help from the government provided as we go forward. But the government is going to be left with a huge legacy debt from, well, governments around the world, not just the UK government. And so, of course, at some point, in some way, that's going to be passed on to the taxpayer. I think it's going to be very much a stock picker's market. I think probably at the moment we're seeing the market fully valued. I don't expect to see too much of an increase. So now it's going to be very much sector specific, M&A activity, as I mentioned just now, and other factors specific to perhaps a certain commodity.
Fantastic. So talking about being stock specific, let's now get in, Alan, to the equities that we're going to discuss this week. First of all, Ocado. So for the technical analysts among our listeners, if you look at the chart, a perfect example of a double top around the £29 level for Ocado, obviously fallen back since then. It's actually down. Quite interesting looking at some of the stats and before coming on the podcast, it's the third biggest faller in the FTSE 100 since the announcement of the vaccine in early November last year, down 21%, but it's had a huge rally before that. But they've announced results today. Alan, what do they look like?
It's a very strong set of results indeed, John. And I think, yes, Ocado did crash because, of course, the perceived reliance on online retailing and online grocery provision. I think the market saw a return to normal, but I don't believe that will be the case. And I think that fall in Ocado shares since March actually makes them look reasonable value now. We know for the first half of the year that revenues rose by nearly 25% on the first half of last year at 1.3 billion. EBITDA tripled, in fact, more than tripled, even though the company continues to invest in its smart platform business, which is basically a white label business that it provides to other grocery retailers wanting to sell online. So they're really starting to expand their offering and scale out into other businesses. Nonetheless, despite all that, and despite that investment, Ocado didn't make a profit, still recorded a tax loss of a loss of 23 million, which, against the turnover is not a huge amount of money, but it's still a significant loss. Although, of course, it was still down 17 million on the 40 million loss announced the previous year. But the group did say that looking forward, they believe that the landscape grocery worldwide has changed for good. And because of what's happened, I think a lot of people simply won't be heading out to the shops or the supermarkets anymore. They will be focusing online. And of course, what that means is that the supermarkets have this huge legacy property assets that they may have to move on. So they're faced with those challenges going forward. Property market's very buoyant at the moment. Will it remain that way? Will there be a surplus of commercial property coming onto the market? Of course, there are all these factors that we need to weigh up going forward. Just on Ocado again, also announced a partnership with Alcampo in Spain. Orkin Retail, the owner, they're going to roll their technology out into Spain. And, this is really a very strong move by Ocado. And I think given the pullback in the shares since the restrictions being lifted was announced back in March, I think we're now looking at reasonable value. I mean, we are actually just off the year lows, just at just over £20 a share. And of course, the shares have traded just under £30 a share on the year.
I mean, when we're looking at the valuation of Ocado at this point in time, Alan, I mean, I'm just looking here at the revenue, group revenue for the first half, 1.3 billion. Annualise that, very crude way of doing it, 2.6. Mm. Then we're looking at a market cap here of around 15 billion. So yeah, roughly trading 6x revenue. And for a company that's quite well established now, one could argue that that's pretty high. And if you then go down to look to the profit, of course, fairly low there and negligible. Of course, there's been a huge increase, but EBITDA of just 61 million. Mm. I mean, where's the market seeing the value in Ocado? Is this a takeover story? Is this a story where they expand their operations to become a major player within groceries? As you said, they start to use their sort of technological platforms and white labeling. Or do you think that people are really starting to focus on how they can expand and just look at increased customer numbers going forward and, use those users to then bring up the profitability of the company, not having to spend so much and bring on new users? I mean, it's quite a high valuation. Why do you think the market is placing such a rich valuation on them at the moment?
I think you've outlined those reasons already, John. And I think it is, it's very much made its intentions clear. It is expanding overseas. It has the smart platform, which can be used by other grocery retailers. So it's seeking to bring all of the grocery or the fragmented grocery retailing market together under so that fragmented marketplace starts to use the Ocado channels, which of course gives Ocado effectively a cut in every single item that's being sold sold online, which is huge. Also the expansion into Europe. I mean, I think in the environment that we're now in, which is, as I said, is very much, I think it's going to be governed by COVID and that change in shopping habits that the company mentioned this morning. I think those factors alone will provide a very strong backdrop for Ocado to grow into. And it's not inconceivable that you could eventually see the likes of Ocado snapping up some of the historically huge retailing retailing names in the grocery sector. We had the American entity take over Morrison's. We could now see perhaps Ocado become an aggressive acquisitive platform in the sector going forward. Either way, I think the market has very much come to Ocado, and I don't see any significant change in the foreseeable future in that.
Fantastic. So an interesting story to watch out and how that plays in the relationship with COVID-19. So moving on now, we're going to be discussing a stock that we have touched on previously on the podcast, Alan, Watches of Switzerland. Now, at the time, he did highlight quite a strong growth case for the company. And just looking here at the chart, that's certainly been reflected in a steady and strong uptrend in share. So what's the latest at Watches of Switzerland?
Well, this is a company that has just, absolutely blazed a trail and has really adapted well to the challenge of COVID and has grown incredibly during that period, and it's just delivered some incredible numbers. So Watches of Switzerland, it's very much what you'd imagine. The company are a retailer of Swiss watches. They have multiple channels across the UK and in the US, 140, 150 odd showrooms in the UK and the US. And of course, they're based at airports around the world, which of course has not served them hugely well. But they have a very strong online offering, which they've spent time developing. The chief executive, Brian Duffy, who's been at the helm since 2014, has just been absolutely focused on growing the online offering. And of course, we heard, last year, with the advent of COVID, stores were closed, and shock horror, the shares slipped down. I think the absolute year low for the stock was £2.48. Based on the July figure last year. In fact, I think it was less than that as we go back prior to that. It was below £2. Nonetheless, it's blazed a trail since then. The company announced great growth as the second half of the year progressed in 2020. Very bullish trading update back in May this year. And also, there was strong buys from the board, share dealing. The chairman and three non-exec directors bought chunky amounts of shares, which helped support and drive the share price forward. But then, of course, in at the end of May, we had the full year or a trading update for the full year and a trading update for quarter four. And the company said it had seen a really strong finish to the year, with adjusted EBITDA expected to be between 104 and 107 million, up from 78 million last year. Net debt, which was previously 130 million, is down to 43 million, beating the guidance it provided earlier in the year of between 60 and 80 million. Group revenues, 905 million, up 13.5%, but driven very much by growth in the US, with 38.5% growth in US and 3.6% growth in the UK despite the store closures. But the biggest driver, as I said a little earlier, was the e-commerce sales. Online sales grew by 120%. And the group said, the outlook is very strong. They were just seeing a very impressive growth. And that's also borne out by the quarter four figures that they announced as well. Revenues in the fourth quarter of 218 million versus 124 in the same period last year. So it's nearly double. UK revenues of 126 million, up from 84 million last year. And in the last quarter, revenues from the US were 92 million, And that's compared to revenues of 39 million for the whole of last year. So you can get some idea of where this is going. The past quarter, revenues and revenue growth in the US and online is accelerating. And the guidance the company are now providing, they're expecting revenues of between 1.05 and 1.1 billion for the 2022, with net debt of about 20 to 30 million. I mean, if they exceed that, of course, that net debt will disappear and the company will have no debt. It'll be this huge money-making machine. So at this point, I think even despite the strong growth, it's still looking like a very strong buy.
Yeah, I mean that's a point that I'd pick on with this company. And I mean, anybody looking at that chart is thinking, well, hang on, I've missed this. This is a huge move higher here. But I mean, from what you've seen of the company, I mean, is this a case that in terms of the shares that it can just simply be supported by further growth going forward? Or is it a story that, yes, okay, they've had a jump in online sales, which is fantastic. You know, during COVID, they survived and they've got through it and they've managed to produce stronger figures than they did before that? Or is it a case that, okay, that happened and now people are really going to be focusing on the underlying growth trend going forward and we support that? Or do you feel that maybe a little bit of this company's sort of progress in the share price is done at this point?
I think probably 3 to 4 months ago or 6 months ago, you'd have looked at the growth and said, oh, surely that's enough for now. It can't go any higher. But it's showing no signs of slowing down. And really, this has all been achieved without airports getting back to normal volumes, without the normal retail outlets getting back to anything like normal volumes. So it's been driven very much by online. So I think that potentially there's a whole lot more to come. And also, you know, if the company decides to expand into other countries extensively, if it decides to expand into Asia and the Far East, the Middle East, it can do anything it likes. Because with the sort of debt levels we're looking at now versus turnover, 20 to 30 million versus the turnover of 1.1 billion is a drop in the ocean. And I don't think anyone would look at that and have any concerns on any levels of debt at all. It just seems it's growth all the way. And there's every reason, I think, to expect further growth going forward, as it will get to a point where it does slow down. But I think the fundamentals that are backing this do provide significant additional upside.
Yes, indeed. It was an interesting story back when we discussed it earlier on this year, and it continues to be so. So I'm sure it's one that we discuss on the podcast as we get further figures from Watches of Switzerland. So, Alan, the final stock that we're going to discuss today, again, is one that we have touched on the podcast. But as many of the companies operating in this sector, the junior explorer sector, there's been quite a strong flow of news. It's Kavango Resources. What's the latest update from them?
Well, again, if we look at the chart for the year, very strong share price performance for the company. The company has now got a market cap of just under 22 million. Shares have traded as low as at 1p on the year. Now it's just on 6p and, close to year highs, but with good reason. So a lot of the factors behind the increase are the fact that it's currently working on a number of projects in Botswana. It's Botswana focused. There is a huge area called what it calls the Kalahari Suture Zone. Of course, it's the Kalahari Desert. It covers a huge amount of the country, and it's been working on this. The Kalahari Suture Zone, and it's 12 prospecting licenses in that region, which are covering getting on for 8,500 square kilometres. The area is very prospective for copper, nickel, and also platinum group metals. But as it started to research the area, a model emerged that was similar in many ways. And this model was produced through teams on the ground sampling, magnetic surveys on the ground, and also aeromagnetic surveys to build up a picture of this model of the geological anomalies that were several hundred meters below the ground. And it very much replicated what was the Norilsk mine in Siberia. And this is a huge mine that produces 90% of Russia's nickel, 60% of, I think 20% of the world's nickel, 10% of the world's cobalt and copper and all sorts. So it's a huge producing mine worth many, many billions. So there's great excitement because the company are now drilling they're starting to drill into this model, having got all the sampling back, and we are starting to see some results come back through. There's a lot of news flow that's scheduled to be released by the company over the next few months. What's also changed as well is that we saw the long-standing chief executive Michael Foster step back to an unexec role, and Ben Turney come in as chief executive. And Ben is a pretty dynamic character. I've known Ben for some years, and he's just got behind this, really understands what the company has, and is able to articulate that very well, both at an institutional and retail investor level. So he's got legions of investors enthused by the recent developments. The other aspect to the business, it has in southern Botswana, in an area called the Kalahari Copper Belt, it has a joint venture, firstly, with before I come to that, it has a joint venture with LV Geo Explorers on two copper prospects, which are highly prospective. A number of developments over the year, we've seen a sampling and Aramag surveys identify anomalies, and there's great excitement around those two. Then there is finally a joint venture with Power Metal Resources on other licenses in the area. They've identified two huge targets there, the Marola and the Acacia targets, which are being explored and will shortly be drilled as well. In addition, there's the Dittau Camps rare earth metals project, which is being rolled with the Kalahari Copper Belt projects with Power Metal into a separate company called Kanya Resources, which will then be separately listed at some stage in the not too distant future on the London markets. So there's an awful lot going on. The primary focus at Kabanga is, as I said, the Kalahari Suture Zone and the drilling that's taking place there. But there's a lot more news to come. And I think we're set for a very busy few months or busy summer from Kabanga.
I always like to know this with these companies, because you know, companies like Kabanga that are working on different projects, not all of them are going to be successful, and typically it's one project that makes the company and produces shareholder value going forward. And in your view, Alan, with Kabanga, which one do you think that's going to be?
Well, actually, it could be any of the three, because they are all developing at a rate of knots. The drilling, there's great excitement. The KSL, I think, is probably the flagship project, because if the drilling confirms what they believe to be underground, it could be absolutely huge. I mean, the Norilsk mine is enormous. So, I mean, if there is the resource there that the company thinks is there, they can joint venture with a mining giant to develop it, then we've seen this happen before. Greatland Gold, of course, with the Havieron deposit in Australia. A joint venture with Newcrest Mining, and the market cap jumped from probably about 30 to 40 million up to as high as 1.3 billion. So, that's transformational for a company of this size. And obviously for shareholders who bought in early doors on an asset like this, it's incredibly exciting because it can be transformational on so many levels. And I think the focus certainly for that sort of transformation is on the Kalahari Suture Zone. But equally with the joint venture with Power Metal, the two Acacia and Marola prospects are similar to the prospects that were identified at T1, which is about 15 to 20 kilometres from the Marolia and Acacia prospects. The T1 was identified by Paul Johnson, the chief executive of Power Metal, with his previous company, Metal Tiger. And of course, that was then sold and a copper asset was developed there, leading to a great return for shareholders some years later. So there's a very real prospect that these two prospects that the joint venture is working on could turn out to have the same sort of levels of copper and could deliver a return too. So, I think for Kavango, it isn't just one project. It could be either of these. And depending on which news gets back to the markets first, it'll be that or the other.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Alan. So just as a recap of the equities that were discussed today on the podcast, initially was Ocado, trades under the ticker of OCDO. Just then was Kavango Resources with the ticker of KAV. And before that was Watches of Switzerland with a ticker of WOSG. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks again, John.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.